1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the program. Ed Marlowe, my guest, as usual on Wednesdays, as we are about to get to week three of the high school football season. We'll talk about that, a little look back at week two, and we are in the first full week for college football. Murray State opens on Thursday night, one of three games in the OVC. Most everyone else will play Saturday, with the exception of Jacksonville State. They've already played. They were dealt a mild upset by North Carolina A&T this past Saturday. So all that to talk about. Plus, we'll talk a little Murray State soccer, some Murray State volleyball as well. But, Ed, it's the time that it gets really busy for everybody. It was busy enough for you guys anyway with all your high school stuff, and now here comes college football.
Yeah, but I'm all right with it.
Me too.
I mean, that's part of, for me.
That's why you do it.
Yeah, and it keeps me on the go. And if you think about it, like this week it's SIU, next week it's Central Arkansas, the week after that we're headed to Lexington, we're going to Kentucky. Looking forward to seeing some friends up there, and actually, honestly, I love the football, but I'm looking forward to some Joe Ellis, some of the Louisville hot chicken, or Louisville Lexington, that area. It's their hot chicken. Joella's hot chicken is so good. So that's the only reason why I travel. I mean, you go eat. Why work when I can?
Is it that good?
I think it's really good.
Do I need to talk Parker Griffith into driving us there on Friday night?
Parker would really like. When y'all go to Lexington, okay. Parker would love Joella's, I think.
We're going the night before, so I need to.
I always get hot chicken and waffles.
Okay.
Like a milder hot chicken. Like, I don't get me wrong, I like volcanic hot chicken, but I like a milder hot chicken, waffles, a little bit of powdered sugar, drizzle a little bit of honey, or a little bit of maple syrup.
That's a dessert.
No, it's delicious is what it is.
God, man.
But you're right. No, it is it is a dessert, but it's also dinner, and it's also delightful.
Okay.
Deep fried and lots of other D words, but it's also going to cause diabetes.
Oh, so. Well, I mean, what a way to go, though. I mean, if you're going to go.
If you're going to go.
Eat that.
Nashville hot chicken with powdered sugar and waffles, yes. But I digress.
Yes, let's do that.
College football is here, and it's an exciting time. I love the racer schedule. I know from the outside looking in, it's really difficult, but it's challenging. This is a young roster mixed with a lot of veterans, and Thursday night, again, the way that I wrote it, it really isn't much of a dress rehearsal. You've got a Missouri Valley team in Southern Illinois that would like to get off the schneid, finishing kind of lower in the conference the last couple of years. This is Nick Hill's third year at head coach, and you got Mitch Stewart going into his fourth year as head coach at Murray State, kind of wanting to get out of the bottom of the conference in the Ohio Valley. So, plus it's a regional rival, so it doesn't get much better than that.
Mitch on Monday, they ask him point blank who's going to be the starting quarterback, and it's still listed on the depth chart as Shuler Bentley or Drew Anderson. I've been at practice. To me, the practices, and I didn't go to all of them, but the two that I saw extensively in terms of scrimmages, Drew was really good. He looked like the guy, but Shuler was solid last season, so we'll see how that pans out. But before we talk about anything else, you may see Preston Rice out there. And if you're a fan in the stands and you're not really aware of the new red shirt rule, you'll went, well, that answers that question. They're going to burn his red shirt. Not necessarily. This new red shirt rule, especially for FCS football, is terrific. Talk a little bit about that, Ed.
Well, Preston's a redshirt freshman, and so anyone that they in, so like he'll be
can't redshirt him.
He's fine. But anybody that they install with his package, so to speak, if it's a play action pass or a wildcat or a quick go or even to a running back that they think is going to be the future at Murray State, anybody that they throw in as a true freshman in their rotation, defensively or offensively, is going to be able to play four games. Any mix of those four games. And I know you and I kind of talked a little bit about this last week, but with the ability to throw in freshmen without the penalty of yanking their red shirt until they have played in four games, which can be non-consecutive, all of a sudden you create a dynamic at the FCS level that allows you not only to evaluate your talent that you have immediately gotten out of your recruiting class, but you can do it without really a true penalty.
Right.
And you can use freshmen can be that wild card. I firmly believe, I have a feeling, at some point this season, I will have a lead from a game where a freshman made an impact. And we might not see him again the rest of the year. We might not see him in another game. We might not see him in another situation. He might not even have a great game for the rest of the year. But there might be that one time that that redshirt freshman had two tackles and an interception, or four catches for 110 yards and a touchdown that won the game. I don't know, but I just feel like that's possible because of this new rule. And I feel like, and I'm sure you'll be able to expand on this a little bit too, a guy like Preston Rice is starting to gain rapport with those younger guys because that's the future.
You're right.
Those are the guys that are going to be with him, not these juniors and seniors, these freshmen and these sophomores that are the same age as Preston, and you've got to start creating some sort of a chemistry with them. And the idea that Preston Rice is going to get packages sooner rather than later, I don't think is a bad idea in the slightest. You can start grooming your offense now for 2019, and I think that's a really good move.
The Racers releasing the rest of the depth chart, and there are no ORs as far as the rest of that goes. Any surprises that hit you in terms of when they released that on Monday?
The one name that surprised me was Kendrick Cadis.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you pronounce his last name?
I think so.
Linebacker originally from Washington State, Highland CC. He's already on the twos. Got here a week ago, Parker Griffith told me. And so it's that was the one name. And originally when I was handed the press release for it, I was looking at the names and I was like, I don't know this. Who is this guy? And so, but I didn't circle it. I didn't think about it. I was like, well, it's probably just, you know, a linebacker. Maybe I missed a freshman or a sophomore somewhere. And then Parker was like, yeah, you guys don't know him. And I was just like, oh, so he's a very recent addition. That's another linebacker on top of TJ Warren from Missouri. So if that shores up their linebacking core, apparently Cadis had a pretty solid career at Highland CC this last year. And Washington State had some pretty solid statistics. Go back and look at him. That's a solid defensive addition. I do think that the transfers are probably done for at this point. You're about to button up the season. I don't know if we'll have any other new faces coming into the program anytime soon. I could be wrong, but it seems like that's probably finished. But that's probably the biggest surprise to me. I mean, you might see. I'd think you probably see a veteran in West Drury return to long snapping duty sooner rather than later.
Marquez Sanford also will be in.
I think Sanford will likely be in. He'll probably be the one by midway through the second, but this first game. I just feel like it's just a matter of time before a lot of that, you know, is sorted out. But, you know, that's also how much they trust this defense. I mean, the two other things that I saw, or one of the things that I saw, seeing Don Parker starting at strong safety as a sophomore, I think just speaks for how well of a freshman season he had. I wrote a little bit about him last year, former Hoptown High graduate, solid basketball player, really good, just kind of all-around athlete. They were high on him last year. Boone was so high on him last year and said that he would be an all-conference type of player at some point. Maybe it's this year, maybe it's next year, but they trust him as a sophomore to play that strong safety role. So, I don't know. Really not too many surprises, though. I looked at the depth chart, I was like, okay, this makes sense. A lot of veterans in key positions. Your wide receivers, wasn't even surprised there. They are high on James Sappington, that's for sure, because Sapp made two deep at wide receiver.
And that's not a fluke.
No, it's not.
It's not.
So, I guess I'm just not – I guess I just wasn't stunned by what I saw on the depth chart, not at all.
I'll have to – when I first heard going into camp that they were going to put Sappington at wide receiver, my first thought is like, oh, my gosh, we are obviously so thin and so desperate there. But that's not the case at all. Once I saw him, like, God, he's got incredible hands, good speed down the sideline. He in terms of the two scrimmages I saw, he caught the best ball of the entire camp in stride, heads right into the end zone. He's pretty good. He'll do some good things, I think.
Yeah, as far as yardage and number of catches is concerned, I'm not necessarily sure if it's going to be Jesse Blackburn type of numbers. He's not.
Yeah, starting, no, I don't think
he's
so.
Not even the starting tight end. That'll be Jensen Fagans. But you know, as far as like, will he come up with a play or two this season
that
really like wows you? I think so. Yeah. He was an All-State wide receiver in high school. He brought that skill set with him. It's just that's not something they've implemented until now.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's kickoff. He's he's backup kicker. He can do a lot of different things. Backup punter if Steve Dawson gets hurt. Spoiler alert, I did not know that Steve Dawson was a freshman, unless that's a typo.
Yeah, I think that's true, as far as I know.
That's a pretty solid freshman pickup, too. That's a guy you don't talk about too much, but the Australian punter, I thought for sure he was a kind of a Gabe Vicente kind of deal, a transfer. I just never looked at his classification, and then I saw on the depth chart, and again, unless it's a typo, Steve Dawson, the punter, the Australian punter, is going to be a freshman. I just did not realize that. I thought for sure he was like another grab, like a two-year grab kind of guy.
SIU will be bringing an all-league punter in when Lane Reason shows up. They also have a all-league wide receiver Daryl Jones, all-league safety Jeremy Chin, one of the best freshmen in the entire league last year at defensive end Anthony Knighton, and then former Graves County product Corey Kreider. I saw the quote you used in the paper. I pretty much used the same thing from the press conference from their head coach. He loves Corey Kreider.
Oh, yeah. Cody's outstanding.
Cody, excuse me.
No, you're good. He was an unbelievable high school player. I mean, he was, I think, within a frog's hair from getting Mr. Football the year that Sindelar did from Caldwell County. So, I mean, Kreider led them to a state championship appearance, and, you know, they shut out, you know, Bowling Green, and he was the best running back in the region, probably one of the best running backs in the state. I don't think that's even refutable, really. And, you know, got to SIU and now is, you know, really played a pretty big role in their defense last year. Started 10 games, had 64 tackles, was fourth on the team in tackles. He'll be an impact player tomorrow night, and I fully expect to see him. Hope to talk to him maybe even briefly if we've got time, just to kind of get a feel for like what his experience has been at SIU so far and kind of how he feels about everything. But, you know, I fully expect him to be a key role player for SIU this season. So they're expecting big things. They were picked to finish eighth in the Missouri Valley, just like the Racers were picked to finish eighth in the OVC. And both teams collide on Thursday night trying to find a better way, so to speak.
To me, the Racers, to win the game, they have to stop the run. If SIU has a really productive running game, it's going to be tough to beat them, I believe. So I'm not sure there's any other way besides them turning it over if they reel off 250, 300 yards or more rushing.
Yeah, and Straub, isn't Straub their quarterback?
Yeah.
Sam Straub's probably going to start. At 20 touchdowns, 9 interceptions last year, threw for about 1,800 yards. I mean, they definitely relied on a lot of different speed guys to kind of break open that running game. But I think they averaged 160 yards rushing last year, SIU did. Problem was they gave up 160 yards rushing.
Right.
Same, so defensively, they kind of really, they struggled defensively, but did not struggle offensively last year. Of course, they do play in the Missouri Valley, one of the greatest conferences in FCS football. So some of those offenses they went up against were pretty tough offenses. But you take a look at, you talk about that running game. I believe they've named, have they named DJ Hill the running back, the starting running back for
yes,
SIU?
Yes.
So you look at somebody like him, he was kind of an all-around guy last year, averaged nearly 5 yards a carry, but he was a backup. I think he was kind of just one of those guys they threw in the mix and said, let's go churn out some yards. But they also spread the ball a little bit, too. I noticed three wide on the depth chart plus a tight end. It's very similar kind of to the Racer scheme. I know that they run a different run package. Mitch talked a lot about on Monday how they really kind of run like a 21 personnel where they run like a bigger power formation. They have a fullback on the depth chart. So I fully expect them to see a little bit more run blocking, whereas you talk about the rushing game, that's something I'm specifically going to be looking. Is Murray State's running game going to be better starting game one, even a remote? I mean, anything better than 70 yards a game is going to be better than last season, which the team averaged 65.5 rushing yards per game. So you're right, and it's so cliche to say the battle of the trenches, so to speak. But if the running game for SIU really gets going, it might be tough to stop because you do have two wideouts that can really, really torch you if you leave them one-on-one.
Yeah, we'll know coming up tomorrow night when the Racers take on SIU. That's one of three OVC games. Moorhead is at Eastern Kentucky. Moorhead, you may or may not know some of you fans. They are not an OVC team when it comes to football. They play in the Pioneer League. This is a rival game. Eastern should handle them. And then Tennessee Tech with a pretty stiff challenge at Chattanooga.
Yeah, absolutely. Chattanooga is always a tough game. Take a look at last year. UT Martin got that big win at Chattanooga. Fully expected to parlay that into a decent OVC season. And they finished 500. I'm not taking anything away from them, but then they kind of stymied and stalled a little bit, and they're starting the OVC. So, but Chattanooga was ranked, and generally they're usually a top 25, top 30 program. So, yeah, that's absolutely a tough test for Tennessee. You said Tennessee Tech?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a tough test for there. That they have a first year head coach too. So that's. But hey, it'll be fun. It's in-state, and Chattanooga's a great program, so that'll be a lot of fun.
Four paycheck games on Saturday. Three big checks, one little check. Austin Peay is at Georgia. It's a team the Racers will play next year. Eastern Illinois is at Arkansas. UT Martin at Mizzou. SEMO gets the smaller check. They're at Arkansas State. And Bethune-Cookman will play at Tennessee State as all the OVC will get going.
Yeah, I'm ready, honestly. I'm glad you mentioned Tennessee State. I'm glad Tennessee State's back on the schedule for the Racers this year. You know, that's a team that the Racers didn't get a chance to play last year. And that's always a great game, every single time. Not even just because of the band,
but
because every single time, both of those teams, a lot of these kids, a lot of the Racers come from that area. So they want to show, you know, like, hey, you know, should have got us Tennessee State. Like, this is what, you know, we've been in Nashville and Antioch, and we've been around in Clarksville, and, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, Racers, that's kind of a foothold, surprisingly, is Central Tennessee. You can get a lot of good kids out of there, and a lot of key contributors over the last few years. But, you know, I mean... it's a great slate of games. You talked about Jacksonville State. Go back and look at them. That game against NCA&T, they had 400 yards of offense. Just couldn't put the ball in the end zone. Ruled time of possession, but just couldn't finish drives.
Yeah.
If they finish drives, they're going to go undefeated in the OVC again. So we'll see, but I'm very much looking forward to the OVC season.
Three Kentucky Bowl Division teams in action as well. Western Kentucky gets it started Friday night at number four, Wisconsin. Louisville plays Alabama at a neutral site game in Orlando, and Kentucky hosting Central Michigan.
I still don't understand why Louisville. I don't have any words for it. I don't know why Louisville has taunted Alabama the last couple of weeks in their press conferences. Their wide receiver saying they could beat their DBs one-on-one. Then you've got Bobby Petrino coming out and saying that they think they can get them. And you're just like, why don't you just say they're the defending national champions? We look forward to playing them, and here we go. Like, I understand being proud of your program and being excited, but, like, you just lost Lamar Jackson, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play college football. Like, one of. Not the. I don't think it's the. But why would you taunt Alabama? Look what happened. You literally have a lesson in last year in Vanderbilt. That started off well. They actually got to play a couple of games before they got to say something about Alabama. Like, Louisville hasn't even put the cleats on yet, and they're already talking smack about Alabama. The defending national champions. I don't get that mentality. I have never once understood. I think that's just too much bravado. And look, if Louisville comes out and somehow wins 30-3 or 30-29 or whatever, then they can talk. You and I talked about this last week. Like, then you can say, hey, we beat national champions. But, like, I just don't. It blows my mind. It makes me.
Well, the term "don't poke the bear" comes from someone who poked a bear and probably didn't live to tell about it. That's why.
They're dead now.
That's right. So if you're at the Arctic, you know, wherever you see a polar bear and you go poke him, probably not going to work out really well for you.
Yeah, you don't poke a polar bear and be like, hey, do you want a Coke? No, that's not how that works.
No. I know those photos look good.
Those Coca-Cola commercials are beautiful, but polar bears are literally man-eating like beasts that will rip apart animals.
All right. Well, the other thing I was going to mention is no more OVC Digital Network in terms of football, men's basketball, women's basketball. You'll still get soccer and women's soccer and volleyball this year on the OVC Digital Network free. But you got to pay for everything else, $4.99 a month. It's going to lead, I think, to better quality, about $80,000 worth of equipment purchases for Murray State alone over the, I don't know if it's all this year, but in the next couple of years. And then after 2 years for those broadcasts, they'll have their own play-by-play, their own color analysts, not piping radio underneath. That makes it a much better broadcast. You can utilize instant replay. I just think it's going to be terrific down the road. But here you go, Ed, and that's, well, you pay $5 for something you got for nothing.
I laughed and I told Adam Wells was complaining about it in WPSD.
I know.
And I just told him, I was like, if I pay you $5 a month, will you sponsor all coverage? Like, every highlight you use, will you say brought to you in part by mediocre sports reporter Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun?
Well, you can make it whatever message you want then. Well, he has to say it.
Exactly.
The God of gods of sports writers.
If I pay $5 a month for you to shut your mouth and get ESPN Plus, I mean, really? Come on. Look, I've already heard people detracting it. I've already had people be like, we're not here to support. We're not here to promote SIU, Edwardsville, and get Eastern Illinois athletic. I don't care. Like, I honestly, it's $5 a month.
And you get, once I saw what all you got with it, it's like, all right, that's a really great deal. It really is.
If you don't like the mothership, fine, whatever. You don't like the four letters, that's your business, and that's carry on, move forward, whatever. Streaming is the way everybody is going to begin with. That is life now. We're cutting the cord and we're building our own cords and we're building our own, basically our own specific channels. My point is that if ESPN is willing to fund and to basically source this material and provide key equipment to programs, you know, this isn't like a welfare program where it's like, well, let's get everybody equal and better. You know, I understand it's not universal health care or anything like that. I'm not trying to go that far with it. But like, when you're trying to provide a specific service of coverage and analysis and any sort of promotion of the league and an entity like ESPN or had it been Fox Sports 1 or whoever comes in and says, we will give you X dollars if you will provide us these services, do it all day, every day. If somebody told me, hey, Ed, we're going to get you a new laptop, a new camera, and 15,000 notebooks and a lifetime supply of ink pens, do the job for us, but we're going to make your content cost $6.99 a month. Oh, sign me up. Oh, that already exists. It's called The Athletic.
Right.
That's life. Like, we will provide the tools for you so that you can do your job better and we make our lives happier. Is it a perfect scenario? No, probably not. It's probably going to be a little bit more of a hassle. There's probably going to be app issues and people will have complaints, but I just feel like, and you already brought the point on this, you're improving the quality of streaming and sports production. That's going to help programs. Murray State's already briefly talked about the concept, the possibility that you open up production from a student level.
Sure.
To start integrating that as a degree.
Yeah.
That's 12 other schools in the OVC that can do it. You all of a sudden, an industry that everyone thinks is either dying, quote, or petering out, gets a huge facelift from the mothership because they can acquire new programs, new digital programming, new digital services, and new tools. Just the technology, like a phone to answer, a camera to use, microphones, live mics, anything like that costs an exorbitant amount of money. The cameras alone to produce the quality that Murray State has, and you would like to think that everybody else could get that same type of quality. For racers alone, I mean, the Murray State's crew can't go to all these other schools and just do it for them. So what happens like when the Racers do go play at like a EKU or an SIU Edwardsville or a Jacksonville State or whoever? I'm not trying to call out any programs. I'm just saying, hypothetically, you go to these other programs and the quality's not the same. What happens when you, Racer fan number two, goes to watch that stream and it's like, oh, that channel sucks?
Yeah.
Guess what? That channel's going to be the same as all the other channels now.
They'll all look good.
They're all going to look good. Now, some of them will probably have to catch up and learn.
I think within 2 years.
Yeah.
That's why I said eventually the quality is going to be better. It may not be tomorrow night.
Yeah, when you're streamlining quality, take a look at something like Netflix. The quality of show programming has improved because they've invested that much money into it to create the content to be the same. Mm-hmm. Lots of different shows, lots of different avenues, and everybody enjoys Netflix. Yeah, ESPN Plus, it's got the ESPN name to it, and yeah, it's $5.99, it's $4.99 instead of it being $0.99 or $0.00. But like, if it's free, it sucks. Like, and it has the chance for it to suck. And that's been the case in some instances for some sports. Like, there's no people have been. I've even heard people have like turned off like OVC Digital Network's like coverage. Like they have just the screen up and the plays going, and they'll turn the radio on, you know, for basketball.
Right,
like,
right.
They'll turn you and Kenny on, or right. You know, or if it's volleyball, they'll just turn the sound off altogether. Or if it's soccer, they just like mute the sound and then like set their screen to see the play of the soccer ball. Like, when you can get all the equipment and the streamlining, it's a job creator, it's a content creator, and it's a consistency creator, and I just don't see really too many detractions of it. I think it's a great move.
Coming up on Friday, Murray State Soccer is back in action. They're off to a 3-1 start. The only loss they sustained is one that I think when everyone looked at the schedule, say, yeah, they're probably going to lose to Ole Miss at Ole Miss, and they did, but they're back against Florida Atlantic on Friday. Try to go to 4-1.
Yeah, absolutely. And the crazy thing is after that, they play, I believe it's either 4 or 5 straight on the road. So this is a tough schedule. They do close their season 5 of 7 at home, most of that in the league. So that's going to be this is a pivotal home game because you'd like to get off to some great momentum going into 5 straight road contests that end up leading into OVC play. It's crazy to think that we're already 25% through with the women's soccer season. I honestly, outside of the exhibition game and a couple of other moments on replay, I've not had a chance to really see what they're capable of this year. I know that Abby Jones, the freshman forward that's been helping out with Maya Watford, and Rebecca Kubin has off to a great start. They were high on her coming into the season. And so, you know, scoring I don't think is necessarily going to be a problem. You do talk about an Ole Miss team that should be right back in the thick of things, an All-American and CC Kaiser. They've got a great forward and former Murray High and Graves County's Channing Foster. She scored on Sunday to give them a 2-0 lead. That was a 1-0 game for about 45, 50 minutes. And then kind of similar to what happened last year against Tennessee, just petered out. You know, you try new things. You just do different. You know, you kind of see the writing on the wall. And so it just didn't work out. Weren't able to scratch a goal. But Ole Miss should certainly be in the NCAA tournament this year. I'd be surprised if they weren't. So it's a good start for Racer soccer.
Volleyball opened at the New Orleans Invitational. They were swept by Houston, and then Saturday they swept Omaha and swept New Orleans. So they go to 2-1 heading to SIU this weekend. But other than that first day, they look really solid.
Well, and we talk every year about what it means for them to get home. Man, they're not home until family weekend.
I know it, yeah.
So we're not going to know. I mean, we'll know statistically kind of how they look by the time they get home, but they'll be home enough to practice, and then they're on the road again for the next four weekends. And so I believe their next contest is it's not the Wyoming Invitational, but it's another Invitational. They've got 3 or 4 Invitationals where they play basically like a tri-match where they go and play up 3 teams, just like they did this past weekend. And so they'll be almost 15, 17 matches into their season before Racers even get a chance to play in front of their home crowd on family weekend. So,
but as we've explained, it works out well in a number of areas. One of those is there's no air conditioning in that arena, and when it's hot, like it's going to be on Friday, Friday, if you were playing volleyball in there, it would be miserable.
Oh, I can't imagine if they played yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I mean, it was 95 at 7 o'clock. I cannot imagine what it would have been like in there. And I'm sure that those are things that are coming in the future, potentially. Yeah. I mean, that's a facility that I see them staying in for quite some time. I could be wrong. There may be...
Well, the floor, and stuff, it's all great. But, I mean, just the no air conditioning is really the only detriment as far as the whole thing goes.
Yeah. You're exactly right. But, I mean, you ask people in Racer Arena, that's... one of the things that they prided themselves.
And, yes, I know.
You know, bringing people to the sauna. It's like, well, you know, and you were the one that was telling me, didn't previous basketball coaches prefer people to turn the heat up a little bit? And
I don't know anything about that. That would be bad. You mean like the thermostat not work in the visiting locker room?
Right.
I don't know. I've never heard of those stories. I don't know.
Yeah. But like I said, I mean, that's...
that'd be terrible.
Well, that's a clear advantage.
Well,
you know?
I'm sure the thermostat didn't work in our dressing room either. It was just bad thermostats.
Well, apparently
thermostats are bad.
Apparently the thermostat in Racer Arena just doesn't work, period.
It was a little warm in there from time to time.
Outside of a fan piping the heat out of the building, it's about all you could do.
Yeah, it could get miserable when it's hot. So anyway, let's go to high school football. Last week, you covered the Crosstown Classic. It was Callaway County's opener under new head coach Chris Champion. Murray High didn't do well in their opener. 5 turnovers against Graves County. Really redeemed themselves, had a really solid game. And for Callaway County, I talked with Mitch Ryan, who worked color that game with Blake Bernier. And Mitch said he saw a lot of really positive things in the game, despite the score.
Well, I think the one thing that I did see is that Murray does have a good rushing attack. That was evident against Graves County. This is a team that's going to be able to run the ball. And that usually is the case. But, yeah, every once in a while you kind of wonder, well, are they going to be able to run the ball this year? They're going to be able to run the ball this year. Spoiler alert, Murray can run the ball this year. They also have really good play-action packages for 2 or 3 of their wide receivers. And Hunter Utley's pretty accurate. I know the game before Graves County, they had several interceptions. But, I mean, still run through for almost 300 yards. And so, you know, Hunter Utley's going to be able to get it done, I think, back there. But that's, you know, Murray's rushing attack is certainly, it's there. Chase Maris, Mark Thompson, even Utley at times can take off with it. They've got the guys to run the ball. As far as Callaway is concerned, they're just so young at offensive line. I think once that starts to gel, I like what I saw out of the offense. I think that there's a chance for them to move the ball, especially in space. I think they can get a screen game going. And they've got 2 or 3 wideouts there, plus a running back in Darius Stribling, who can, if they spread the ball enough, if they can spread the offense, you know, and we haven't even mentioned Luke Schwepker, Dave Schwepker's son, who was a true weapon. I still don't understand why that second touchdown was called back. Did you see any of the game at all?
Did not, no.
They have a Wildcat package. Spoiler alert if any coaches are listening trying to scout for Callaway, but I mean, if you go watch the tape, it's there. They have a really good scout package where the Wildcat was implemented and Schwepker took off for not one, but 2 touchdowns. One of them counted. The first one put them on the scoreboard. The second one would have made it 35-13. Schwepker is a true weapon. They have got to get him the ball. And I know that he's kind of been one of those guys that's been growing in the system and trying to get better and better and better. But, man, Schwepker forced the fumble near the start of the game when it was 7-0. Chase Maris was going in, was about to score, went to kind of reach for the pylon. Schwepker just punched it out and recovered it, kept it a 7-0 game. So this is a guy that I think, in my opinion, should be one of the leaders on the team. But Schwepker's got to get the ball more, for sure. They tried to find him at wide receiver, tried to find a few passes and connect with him. Didn't happen. Murray's rush was a little bit overwhelming, I think, for Callaway's young offensive line. But, you know, they've got weapons. Probably need to solve some things at quarterback, figure out what's going on there. But, again, a lot of it's just going to come down to growing that protection around the quarterback. And again, it's a young, you know, fresh, you know, kind of youngish, smallish offensive line. Once that gets a little beefier and a little bit more sturdy, I think Callaway, you know, Champion's implementing what he knows.
Sure.
And what he knows is Mayfield football. And if that means spread attack, which is exactly what Joe Morris does over at Mayfield, you know, spreads the ball, uses the screen game wisely, has a strong running game, Callaway is going to be in the right direction. But, you know, We'll see. It's a tough schedule for a first year.
Fans of high school football have a mouth-watering matchup Friday night. Tillman and Mayfield, you usually don't have to say a lot about it anyway. But Mayfield, this is no spoiler alert here. Hey, they happen to be good again this year, but Tillman, whoa, what a surprise. Off to a 2-0 start. This is I can't wait.
Well, this is that was me quietly clapping kind of in the background. I'm not going to be at that game. Obviously, I'll be at Graves McCracken, which I also think will be a solid game. Al Wellman will be at our game of the week. This is the 105th matchup. It's one of the longest running rivalries in the history of high school football at any level, any state. I'd like to see it compared to some other programs, but yeah, 105 times that after Friday this game will have been played. I believe Mayfield's won the last 10. I think that's right. I got to go back and double check that for sure, but they've won. It's been what I would consider a decade of dominance. I don't know what's going to happen Friday. I feel like Mayfield certainly should be favored at War Memorial. And when it's all said and done and Mayfield wins, say, 45-30 or 45-15 or 45-10, I maybe we shouldn't have been so hesitant. The one thing I will say, there is a bit of intrigue going into this game because Tillman has played so well. They absolutely roasted McCracken. Anybody listening, I'm sorry. I know McCracken's learning. Yeah, I know McCracken's got a few key pieces. I'm not trying to take anything away from them at all. But Tillman absolutely came fired up in that game. So much so that, like, our photographer said that she, Ellen Onan, said that she was taking pictures of the crowd of the game, and even they were stunned. You could see the look on their face, like, wow, we have a team that's, like, it was week one, but could play like this. And it's been a little while since you've seen that kind of fire and step and that attitude at Tillman. Just to be honest, like, you just you haven't seen that synergy. And if this is a team that's going to play for Jonathan Smith and a team that's going to play for this staff and a team that said prior to the season starting that they were going to play for Steve Duncan, I can't bet against that. You know, kids get fired up for all kinds of different reasons. And, you know, is this a season of destiny for Tillman? I don't know. They blasted Liberty Tech last week, 35-0. Liberty Tech Magnet had two first downs at halftime, finished with negative rushing yardage, I think, by the end of the game. Tillman had rolled up 350 and a rolling clock. So I don't... You know, and six rushing touchdowns by three different guys, like two each for each guy. And so I don't know what to expect, on Friday. I do know that Mayfield is playing great football right now. I know that Tillman's playing great football right now. And all that means is the 105th matchup has a chance to be a great game that we won't forget.
Man, and the weather will be great. So, you know, it's going to be just what an atmosphere it'll be.
Well, amazing. War Memorial, I mean, War Memorial could have 7th grade football in it. It'd be a great atmosphere. I mean, it just, you know, kids that barely can put on the chin straps, you know, but, and it'd be a good game. But the one thing that I will say is Tillman Mayfield is always a great atmosphere regardless of the team's success. But this is the first time in a while, I want to say it's been 6-7 years, maybe a little longer, that both teams go into the game 2-0. It's been a long time. It's just been, you know, both teams have had tough schedules in years past and having to play week one, week two key matchups. But Tillman hasn't started 2-0 since 2012. So that alone is kind of a thing. So it's, you know, it's an exciting time for Tillman football. Again, I know it's week three. It's really early. I do believe Mayfield is the favorite for obvious reasons. When you have a quarterback in Jaden Stinson and the type of wide receivers they have this year, Cade Neely, D.S. Perry, running back like Kentre Matthews, a defense that's really starting to figure it out, you can't bet against them at home especially. But I think it's going to be a great game, and I hope it's a great turnout.
The game you're covering, Graves at McCracken, this also is, one of the two featured games in Western Kentucky.
Yeah, and I fully expect, I think McCracken at home is going to be, they haven't been home yet. This is a great home, you know, opener for them. They're going to be, it's going to be hard. I say that. I don't know what's going to happen with their game either, obviously, but Graves County is off to a 1-1 start. They're going to be looking to bounce back off of a tough Caldwell loss. McCracken's going to be looking to bounce back off of a tough 0-2 start. I think it's going to be a really gritty game. Graves beat them last year 38-22, so I have to think a lot of those pieces did return outside of Trevor Grant, who graduated. I'm not sure how it'll shake up. I've got to lean a little bit toward Graves as being probably more successful. But McCracken always plays well at home. So I don't know. It's two great matchups for sure, and I'm just glad to be a part of it. It's going to be exciting.
Before I let you go, a little bit on soccer. Kind of a shock last night in terms of the overall results with Murray sweeping Marshall County and Callaway getting swept by Graves County.
Yeah, the second district's open. It's open for business. I should have. Now that I think about that today, like, I liked my leads, but now that I think about it, that should have been my lead. The second district is open for business because it really is. Like, I think Marshall, both girls and boys, are probably the favorite to win even now the second district championships. But Graves County and Murray have properly announced that they're not going to make it easy. And I like that. I love the second district. I know that there's been years and decades of dominance for Marshall, decades of dominance for Murray. You know, even a couple really great seasons recently from Callaway's girls and boys. But I'm a big fan, and we say this, and Mayfield's boys apparently are right there this year as far as they're probably one consistent goal scorer away from being in that thick. So the district tournament is always one of my favorite. The second district tournament, the emotions are so high because you're just not – there's no margin for error. That's really why. The fans get crazy for the second district soccer because there is no margin for error. It's exactly what happened last night. Murray scored on two pivotal mistakes in the midfield against Marshall, and that's all it took. And that's the difference. And so, like, for me, because that margin of error is so thin, razor thin almost, it just makes the competition that much better. And your fan bases really get into it. Your coaches get heated. You know, your players get amped up. You get better soccer photos when they're that excited. Like, it's just, there's all sorts of reasons and things that make those type of games really special. But second district soccer just has a special place in my heart because of how competitive it is.
All right, Ed, appreciate the visit. Look forward to chatting with you next week about maybe some good results with some of these.
All right? Sounds good.
That is Ed Marlowe.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.